make recordings all the time for lots of different reasons, but to have the experience of working with the composer and having everybody together to have not only just this experience, but the product of the experience is really important.
Sometimes I hear an idea that's better than what I had in mind, and I love that. Sometimes I had a sonority in mind, but the group brings a kind of emotion that deepens the experience of it. Each group may bring a slightly different character. So as composers, we try the best we can to write down what we mean, but it's impossible to write down everything about a sound. And my scores have performance notes, and they have all kinds of things written in the margins about what players should do, but even so, it's impossible to say everything.
A lot of times we don't take time as musicians to have those experiences. You know, we're getting ready for the next performance, we're getting ready for the next gig, and you're just constantly moving and going through music. But to take time and spend so much time on three pieces of music that we're recording is different. It's a different process. We've been performing his quintet now for 2 years, and very intensely over the past 6 months. But even the last couple of nights in rehearsal, there's still so much to discover.
I also take great pleasure in the different things that different performers bring to a piece. That's part of this kind of music, is that the composer brings a certain amount, the players bring a certain amount, and the end result is a fusion of all these different musical personalities.
Well, I'm sitting with Rose French, who'll be no stranger to our audience, and a man who should not be a stranger, and probably by sound is not, John Steinmetz. It's great to have you here, both.
Thank you.
Thanks, great to be here.
I have to start this conversation with Rose by saying I had this very excited email. We're making this recording that John Steinmetz has chosen us to record music. And I thought, what a tip of the hat to your group. That's fantastic.
Yeah, it's... We first met John at the University of the Pacific in 2014 when we gave one of the early performances of his piece for Dectet. And we were invited by the University of the Pacific, their faculty ensemble, the Pacific Arts Windwind and Quintet, to come out and premiere this piece with them. And we got the opportunity to work with John. I actually got to sit right next to John for the weekend. And last summer, we performed at the International Horn Conference. The Millab Chamber Players did, and we got to perform at Disney Hall. So John lives in the area, and so I invited him to our concert and invited him out to dinner afterwards with the intention of asking him about recording the quintet, his quintet, because it's been recorded twice before. So we wanted to kind of have his input as far as whether we could do it again.
Is a composer really going to turn down something like that? Does Beethoven say, no, I don't think any more recordings of my quartets now, and I don't think so.
You know a lot of musicians, though, and ensembles and groups. You're an advocate for everything from playing music to the reality that we've all grown up in, sometimes a mistaken reality of being more actively involved in music rather than just downloading sound. But everybody needs a Rose French, don't they? Everybody
oh, absolutely. In fact, we were talking about this in the car on the way from the airport, because music relies on the Rose Frenches of the world who actually organize things and make them happen. There are lots of us musicians who love to play, love to write the music, love to go to concerts. But the crucial people are the ones who are making the phone calls, filling out the paperwork, reserving the spaces so that these events can happen.
And person actually invite John to come see, come hear us play. And by the way, can we record your quintet?
Yeah, right.
So do you get that? Are you asked that often, or just, I would assume, unless it's the first time out, people are just, it's available to record, right?
That's right. For a newly commissioned piece usually has some restrictions. The people who commissioned it have the rights for a while to record. But for a piece that's out there, they need to get permission to record it, but because the work's under copyright. Mm-hmm. So they have to ask for that. But there's not a restriction about who can do it.
I think one of the big things, though, correct me if I'm wrong, Rose, was could John be here for the sessions?
Right. And I thought that would be interesting, to really have a recording that had his thumbprint on it, that had all of his impressions. I mean, when we worked with him in 2014, sitting down and having him explain exactly why he wrote something the way he did and the exact color and sound that he wanted made it a totally different experience. So it makes it really authentic instead of just putting another recording out into the world.
So as composers, we try the best we can to write down what we mean, but it's impossible to write down everything about a sound. And my scores have performance notes, and they have all kinds of things written in the margins about what players should do. But even so, it's impossible to say everything. And so while I'm always really excited to work with performers, I also take great pleasure in the different things that different performers bring to a piece. That's part of this kind of music, is that the composer brings a certain amount, the players bring a certain amount, and the end result is a fusion of all these different musical personalities. So I'm not going to be trying to mold these performances to the one right thing, because there isn't one right thing, but I'll be looking forward to the energy and inspiration that they bring to it as well.
That was my question, was if you're sitting with melody chamber players, or you're listening to another ensemble, and they're asking you for your feedback, I've got to think one of the things you're tempering your own ideas of what you had when you wrote the piece was, from the notes I put on the score, from the content they know of what I intended, what meaning do they extrapolate out of that? So is it better to change what I'm hearing, or just to say, oh, I get what you're doing?
Both things can happen, right? Sometimes I hear an idea that's better than what I had in mind, and I love that. Sometimes I had a sonority in mind, but the group brings a kind of emotion that deepens the experience of it. And maybe the score says, play these notes short, but it's impossible to say exactly how short, and whether it's a comically short or brutally short, or what kind of short is it? And each group may bring a slightly different character. On the other hand, in some cases, there is a general kind of expressive character that I have in mind. And if I feel like the group is far away from that in a way that's not serving the flow of the music, then I'll say something about that.
Very often I find myself asking composers, what do you want me to walk away with from a piece of music? And I'm starting to think maybe that's an unfair question.
Well, in my case, there's not any one right thing to walk away from. I'm hoping that you'll have some kind of experience. I'm hoping that the piece will draw your interest most of the time. Most of us space out at some point, but I'm hoping that it'll be engaging enough that you'll want to keep paying attention to what's happening in the music. I'm hoping that something in it might arouse an association or a memory or be a sound that is compelling for you, maybe touch an emotion. But people listen in such different ways, and even from the same piece, I think a person may need different things at different times. So I don't think there's any one right way to listen or any one right thing to get. But I hope that people will engage with the music.
Rose, it's obvious you're a big fan. And I told you that I knew of John, and I kind of followed particularly what he'd written. What's it like working? You've worked with him before. I know you're looking forward to the weekend, the recording that's going to take place. But why? What's exciting about that?
I think just the idea of everything coming together. You know, people make recordings all the time, and for lots of different reasons. But to have the experience of working with the composer and having everybody together to have not only just this experience, but the product of the experience is really important. Mm-hmm. People spend a lot of time listening and not actively listening, and I think that this experience kind of brings people together in a different way. I can't really put my finger on it right now.
But aside from admiring him, obviously mm-hmm. the music is challenging and rewarding to play. Mm-hmm. What I just heard you say was having a collaborator in the room who actually wrote the piece.
Yeah.
One who communicates as well as obviously.
Yeah, because as musicians, I mean, you know, we're all professional musicians, but to continue to grow and get better and become even better musicians and work with other musicians, it helps you evolve and become better at what you do, better at your craft, and that's what I'm, you know, trying to constantly do. And working with John last time, there was just so much thought and inspiration, but not telling you exactly what to do. And I actually pulled out my old part from last time. And there's some great phrases that he said that, you know, got us to where what he wanted from us, but without telling us exactly. And I think that, you know, a lot of times we don't take time as musicians to have those experiences. You know, we're getting ready for the next performance, we're getting ready for the next gig, and you're just constantly moving and going through music. But to take time and spend so much time on three pieces of music that we're recording is different. It's a different process. We've been performing his quintet now for 2 years and very intensely over the past 6 months. But even the last couple of nights in rehearsal, there's still so much to discover, you know. And I don't think as musicians we take the time to do that. Or, you know, sometimes we can't, you know, we're professionals, we're busy. But to stop and really pause and take that time has been great. It's been really enlightening. And
performance is exciting.
You
get immediate feedback. You're in the moment.
Yeah.
The audience is breathing or whatever it's doing. But recording, you're really making, I'm sitting this down.
Yeah.
This is my testament about this piece by
Jane
Simon.
And I think, and not only that, but it also shows the growth of the ensemble throughout time. I mean, we recorded our first CD a couple of years ago, and then to record this, and we recorded a short piece last year by Carrie Turner. And so I think that, for me, I think that's the importance of recording for ensembles at this point. That's my opinion, is to show growth and depth and you know, longevity to a group. I mean, everybody produces recordings, but why did they do it? What is the intention? And I think that's the other part of why we wanted to record and why it's important to record. But the experience of just spending so much time on one piece of music and still just digging deeper and deeper and having more questions is an opportunity that we don't get all the time. I mean, it's really fascinating to just sit in rehearsal after playing this piece for 2 years and still have questions.
I think that's one reason we performers love to play chamber music, because chamber music gives us chances to do that, to come back to the same piece again and find more in it or find a new approach to it. And in chamber music, at least some of the time, the performers have a little more control over how much they'll get to work on the music before the performance or even between performances. So we actually like to dig in mm-hmm. in that way. But a lot of the music we make, we have to put together rather quickly. And part of our job is to try and suss out the music fast and put across the character really, really well. But I think there, for me as a listener, there's a difference when I hear ensembles, whether it's orchestras or small groups, that have played together for a long time, have developed a musical personality, and have played a particular piece a lot. Those are especially exciting.
We talk about the intimacy of the experience of hearing chamber music. We sometimes forget those 9-13 people are having experience themselves. There's no one waving a stick at them. They've gone through rehearsals and they've collaborated and matched sounds, or maybe not matched sounds at the right places. And you know, we don't always think about that on this side of the equation.
Right. Mm-hmm. Yeah, I'm curious to see what will happen over the coming years, because for movies now, when you get a DVD, there's all this extra material about how the movie was made. And people seem really interested in that, the behind the scenes part that's usually hidden from the audience. And in music, we don't usually show the audience what our process has been. But I suspect that people are really curious about that and really interested, and that they would like to know more about what you're talking about, so that things that seem so effortless in performance often took quite a bit of time to decide how something should go and then to be able to do it that way. And there are things in my wind quintet, for instance, where instruments have to pass the same note between different instruments. And I know it takes a lot of work to do that, to match the volume levels, to make the note blend from one instrument to another, particularly with five instruments that sound so different from each other. That's just one example of something in that piece that people have to work on, so that when they perform it, it'll seem like no work was necessary.
While I have you here, I don't want to let you go without asking you this, because wherever you're from, you're from Altadena. If there's an Altadena chamber group, right? It's just the Altadena chamber group. If you just go 15 miles down the road, they might say, oh, that Altadena good, they're really good. But when it's in your own backyard, it's like, oh, Mill Avenue, I know where that is. And tell people here why you've come to work with the Mill Avenue.
Oh, right. People may not realize they have a treasure here. One of the things that's happened in our country, I don't know how long ago it happened. It sort of took me by surprise. But that there are so many fantastic musicians in our country now, that the old idea that you had to go to a major coastal city in order to find really good musicians, that's no longer true. There are fabulous musicians just about everywhere, really well-trained, really thoughtful, soulful musicians. And this group is, even given that, I would say, the Mill Avenue Chamber Players seems to be exceptional in their musical ambitions, in the variety of things they're doing in the community, in the way they interact musically with each other. It's a really good group, and you're lucky to have them here.
Thanks. It's good to have somebody else say that. I can see it on the radio every day, and oh, that's Sterling Dawkins.
Believe him, folks.
I've told Rose that I'm a huge fan of hers. Again, we're blessed in this town. As you say, we don't give enough credence to the people that we live with in our own environment.
I think that happens everywhere. You know, people who were working in New York, who say in the early part of the 20th century, about whom we now speak as though they're deities, they felt looked down upon because they were from New York and not from Europe, right? People in Los Angeles who were of the generation of my teachers felt ignored because you had to be from New York to be anybody important. So wherever you're from, you suffer this problem.
Just as an aside, you were born in California.
Yeah.
And here, anywhere between California and New York, if you were this side of the Mississippi River, you were just the hinterlands, you were an outpost. But growing up when I did, when I found the teachers that I had available to me, came here for a reason. To reinvent themselves. They didn't want to dig music that way. Break the rules, I was told. You know, try it. What the heck? It's 'cause somebody says you can't play that way. Don't listen to that. Maybe you'll find out you can't, but try it. They were all there for adventure. You know?
I think that's true of the West in general, that a lot of people came West in music or in other fields for just that reason, They didn't want to be hemmed in by convention, by assumptions about what you should do. They had something different in mind. And so the attitude in the West seems to me to have been more open, that whatever you wanted to do was okay. And you might have to work hard to find your people who are going to support the thing that you were doing, but nobody would throw you out for doing it.
So recording next 4 days?
3 days.
3 days.
Mm-hmm.
When will the CD come out?
August 14th, we're having a CD release concert at Central United Methodist Church, and it's free.
In the reality of making music and listening to music as we know it now in the 21st century,
mm-hmm.
CDs used to mean a whole different thing. I don't know how much John makes from CD releases of his music.
Right.
I don't know what you anticipate making. What's the impetus, though, for making the CD?
I think it's this weekend, this experience, and then having that historical document, because really the recordings become, you know, it's kind of like an audition. It's a snapshot in time. But if you don't have those snapshots in time, you have nothing to look back on as an ensemble. And next year, next season is our 10th year already. And so to have these documents of your work is so important. It's just, that's why it's worth all the effort to put these, you know, something like this together. So
for me as a composer, recordings have been really helpful. And two of the three pieces on this CD have not been recorded. One has only been performed one time so far. So one of the main functions of recordings of my music has been to let players know about pieces that they might not otherwise know about. So this Dektet has been performed by the groups that co-commissioned it around the country. But other than those groups, it's not very widely known. And the woodwind quartet that we'll do called Fits and Starts is, I think, fills a need in the repertoire. There are not that many woodwind quartet pieces for people to play, but so far people don't know about it. So this recording will help a lot in that way, just to get the music out there mm-hmm. so that people can play it. I love the idea that people who, for whatever reason, like the music can then listen to it whenever they want. But my bias is always toward live performance, where the musicians making the music and the people listening to the music are in the same mm-hmm. room together. It's a really old-fashioned idea. I mean, this has been obsolete for a couple generations now because of technology.
I think it's coming back, though.
Well, I hope so, because I really like it. I don't think it's ever going to go away, because people have that yearning to connect in person mm-hmm. with other people. And mediated transactions like we have over the internet can't provide the same kind of connection that you get when you're in the mm-hmm. same room as we can get now when we're talking. Anyway, so oddly enough, one of the reasons I like the recordings is that they help more of those live performances to happen, where people can share the music together at the same place and time.
Mm-hmm. I think you're right that that's changing, and you become more aware of it, I think, when you attend a performance of a new piece of music. That I was sitting listening to John Adams' Harmonia Lyra, which I thought, I was in St. Louis. I thought, well, I don't want them to go to the meetings they're having, so I'll go to the symphony. And I'm in this wonderful old theater listening to St. Louis play, and at the end of the piece, the audience stands up as one. I look all around me, there's 80-year-olds, there's high school kids who probably got deals on the tickets because there were a couple of seats left. There were college students behind me, obviously musicians, casual listeners. Everybody's on his feet because you're in the room.
Mm-hmm.
It was magical. But if I play that on the radio without that experience of the music thumping you in the chest or tickling you along some way, it doesn't. We don't have the acumen yet, I don't think, emotionally, to link to it without the visual stimulus. Being in the room, hearing the the room vibrate with the sound, but I think that's what people keeps people coming back. We grew up when it was the sandwich, and you had Beethoven, you threw in the new piece, and you played Brahms at the end, right?
Yeah.
Now a lot of folks just come for the first piece because they know that's the thing they want to hear, and then Beethoven, that's great. I'll listen to my recording when I get home.
That's great that you brought that up, because I think composers are like Adams is a great example, are writing music that people really want to hear, and music that sounds great in the room. And I think you can have a great experience with his music on a recording, but it is much more mind-blowing when you hear it in person. It's one thing we in classical music, I think, are only now sort of figuring out how to explain. We talk about it among ourselves, but people who are not initiates, not regular concert goers, don't yet quite understand what we mean when we say, no, you got to hear this live. This is really, it sounds different live. It feels different. It touches you differently. Just as you were saying, the way the sound waves hit your body is different when you hear it live. And we maybe for too long emphasized a kind of equivalence that you could have a concert hall experience in your home, something like that. And you can have a fantastic experience in your home. It's a great experience. It's just different. And there is something that happens in the concert hall that can happen anyway that you can't get anywhere else. And I hope our field masters communicating that, because I think it's crucial that people understand that difference and come to value it.
What I think is what I found as far as building an audience with our group is that you have to give them a reason to trust you, to want to come and invest their time with you and leave their house. Because you can have any concert experience, a lot of concert experiences at home. You have to give people a reason to leave their house. And then once you build that relationship with that audience member, they trust you. They're going to come back and hear what you do next. And I think that authenticity, that relationship is changing with audiences and performers, and that's where it's going to help classical music stay alive.
It turns out that audiences connect with the music through the people who are making it. And we have, in classical music, we've promoted this pantheon of composers up on Mount Olympus, you know, that supposedly the reason to pay attention to the music was because you trusted them. So you trust Beethoven, you trust Brahms, you come to hear what they have to say. But in fact, I think many listeners don't have that strong relationship with those deities. They like the people who are making the music here and now. And the more they get to know them. And similarly, I think musicians are learning that they need to have a relationship with their audience as well. We as musicians can't just go and say, all right, here's the music, take it or leave it. But in fact, we need to know something about the people we're playing for. We need to grasp what kind of experience they're having, what kind of experience they're looking for. Not so that we can do a sort of a marketing focus group and pander to the thing they're most likely to buy, but to try and design our music making and the experiences and even the settings so that it can be most powerful for people. And so that's something our field is learning too, I think.
Mm-hmm. Well, it's going to be an exciting 3 days for you. Yeah. We'll all be waiting for August when it comes out. But Rose, thanks for getting everything going.
Oh, thank you. Thank you for having us.
Thanks for doing it.
And John Stein, it's an honor to meet you and get to sit with you.
You're welcome. Thank you for being here, and thanks for saying those nice things.